And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on June 18th, 2015. And I want to suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy because there might just be something you want to write down, a web page, email address, names, telephone numbers, you name it. Anything could happen. So let's start off with announcements. Rebel, Rebuild, and Rewild 2015 is going to be happening in a beautiful forest setting north of Ottawa from June 22nd through the 28th. This is the Canadian Action Camp, and it's an eco-anarchist action camp, and they're going to be doing a whole lot of great stuff up there. But unfortunately, I cannot give you any information about exactly where that's going to be, even though it's happening in 4 days. Went to the website. There's nothing there. Went to various other websites just a moment ago, and they're not there. So I guess you're going to have to write to Rebel, Rebuild, Rewild at riseup.net and find out where the hell it is, because they're not letting people know. Once again, June 22nd through the 28th, somewhere north of Ottawa. There's a lot of that. In Algonquin territory, Rebel, Rebuild, and Rewild will be having their action camp. Once again, go to Rebel, Rebuild, Rewild at riseup.net, and maybe they'll, that's an email address, and you, maybe you'll get a response from them. I can't. The 2015 Earth First Round River Rendezvous is going to be taking place July 1st through July 6th, and it's going to be taking place at Romance Header in Goshen, Vermont. They just apparently changed their location in the last day or two. anywhere, that is the location that I have at the moment. The Green Mountain Earth First is the folks who are letting us know about this on their website. greenmountainearthfirst.tumblr.com is how you can find it out. They have all the usual things. So, anyway, they have all kinds of stuff that you can read about on the webpage. And once again, that's greenmountainearthfirst.tumblr.com. And you can find out about that through the Earth First Journal page. It'll get you here. Let's see, their email address is gmef@riseup.net. They got a whole page of stuff for you to engage in. Anyway, it's July 1st through July 8th is the Green Mountains, Vermont rendezvous. This is the 36th Round River Rendezvous. So, anyway... check it out. Unfortunately, Uncle Dennis will not be there this year. I had sort of thought I might make it, but anyway, those plans changed. Have a good time out there. All right, let's get into some news here. California non-lead ammunition requirement approaches. This message from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. They want to remind folks that starting July 1st, 2015, non-lead ammunition will be required when hunting on all California Department of Fish and Wildlife lands and for all Nelson bighorn sheep hunts anywhere in the state. California Department of Fish and Wildlife reminds hunters who plan to hunt bighorn sheep or to hunt at any California Department of Fish and Wildlife area or ecological reserve on or after July 1st, you need non-lead ammunition. and you should get it ahead of time. You should also practice shooting this non-lead ammunition to make sure your firearms are sighted in properly and shoot correctly and accurately with non-lead ammunition. Please note that non-lead ammunition for some firearm calibers may be in short supply, and you should plan accordingly. Further phase-out of lead ammunition will occur on July 1st of next year, that's 2016, when hunters must use non-lead ammunition when hunting with shotguns for upland game birds, except for dove, quail, and snipe, small game animals, fur-bearing mammals, and non-game birds, except when hunting at licensed game bird clubs. And starting on July 1st, 2019, non-lead ammunition must be used for taking any game anywhere in the state of California. However, non-lead ammunition is required for hunting, but lead ammunition can still be used for target shooting. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife wants to remind you that there is a no-lead exclusion currently in the Condor Zone, where it remains illegal to hunt anything using lead ammunition. Hunting is not allowed at all California Department of Fish and Wildlife areas or ecological reserves. For those areas where hunting is allowed, once again, non-lead ammunition will be required starting July 1st, 2015. Hunters are reminded to be familiar with all hunting regulations before going into the field. If you want further information, go to www.wildlife.ca.gov. Turning to the web, a climate activist has locked themselves to a VGS construction equipment to halt pipeline destruction. It's a nice picture here on the webpage. A climate justice organizer has locked herself to machinery at a Vermont gas pipeline construction site in Essex, Vermont, calling for an end to fracking and the construction of new fossil fuel infrastructure. For almost 3 years, we've seen state agencies and Vermont Gas ignore the concerns of landowners, ratepayers, and the public, said Joanna Anderson, an outdoor educator and member of Rising Tide Vermont. We're here to stop construction of a pipeline that has little or no public support and extreme regulatory uncertainty. We're calling on the Public Service Board to do the same after next week's technical hearings. Police apparently arrived on the scene, but we don't have any further update on that one. Moving to Seattle, Seattle kayaktivist blockade Shell's Alaska-bound rig for a second time. I guess that news means that they have blockaded it for the first time. Anyway, this action occurred on June 15th. Kayaktivists confronted Shell's Polar Pioneer drilling rig as it attempted to leave Seattle for Arctic waters. Shell wants to build its haul its 40,000-ton Arctic destroyer to Alaska as soon as possible, but these courageous individuals are saying Shell no. Every minute the brave protesters can delay Shell's Arctic drilling plans is another chance for President Obama to reconsider his disastrous approval of oil drilling in Alaska. The president's decision on Arctic drilling will be a deal breaker for his climate legacy, but it's not too late for him to stop this catastrophe before it starts. And in reading other news, I believe that the Coast Guard arrested around a dozen folks in that action. So, moving to Argentina, rabbits have been liberated from a breeder in this anonymous report from Biteback. And we are on the Earth First Newswire. Liberation of rabbits from a breeder in Argentina. It is only with concrete actions that we can have ideas, otherwise they are only an empty set of words. When I saw those cages, from that moment my mind was imprisoned with them like the rabbits they confined. All that was necessary for freedom was determination, will, and organization. Therefore, we visited the place where the rabbits were bred to be murdered and emptied each of the cages where more than one rabbit lived in each, and then those animals deprived of their liberty were free for the first time. They were released in areas where their presence would not hurt the balance of the area, separated by a considerable distance to prevent reproduction. Now there was freedom. They might have survived or not in the new natural habitat, but freedom was on their side and not in the hands of a miserable being. Redundantly, this action is dedicated to them. And that news came out on June 11th. And moving to Venezuela, tribes protest against violent mining gangs. In this story from Survival International and found on the Earth First Newswire, Venezuelan Indians have blocked a landing strip in the Canaima National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, to protest at illegal miners destroying their lands and their lives. Over the last decade, illegal mining for gold, diamonds, and other minerals, some run by armed gangs claiming to be members of Colombia's FARC, guerrilla army, has spread like wildfire through the Venezuelan Amazon, affecting such tribes as the Yanomami, Hopi, Yapa, and Yaquana, and Aracuna. An Aracuna spokesperson told Survival International, the global movement for tribal people's rights, "Mining is a huge problem in our indigenous territories. The miners are extracting the riches of our land, and the earth is crying out for help. Our rivers are drying up because of the mining. We must look after nature. If we don't, the whole planet will suffer. Rivers are being contaminated with poisonous mercury used in the gold mining, which is entering the Indians' food and water supply and devastating them, their health. In some indigenous communities, the infiltration of gangs has led to prostitution and alcoholism." Rather nasty picture here of a bunch of illegal mining on the banks of a river. A study found the majority of indigenous women living along the Caura River in the Amazon had levels of mercury above internationally accepted standards. It was also found that in 1 in 3 women showed a high risk that their newborn children would suffer neurological disorders. The Indians have denounced the Venezuelan military for failing to tackle the illegal mining and for creating a climate of terror and fear. Some of the officers are known to be involved in the illegal gold mining operations. While Venezuela's constitution recognizes indigenous peoples' rights to their ancestral lands, few have received official title to their territories, and the government has announced it will open up large parts of the Amazonian rainforest, including Indian lands, to legal mining. Tribal peoples are the best conservationists and guardians of the natural world, yet their lands, resources, and labor are stolen by industrialized societies in the name of progress and civilization. A toxic algae bloom off the West Coast might be the largest ever. A toxic algae bloom in the Pacific Ocean stretching from California north to Washington State might be the largest ever detected off the U.S. West Coast, scientists said. The bloom, which first appeared in May, involves microscopic algae that produce a neurotoxin potentially fatal to humans called domoic acid, according to researchers at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Levels of domoic acid in California's Monterey Bay are some of the highest scientists have ever observed, Rafael Cudella, professor of ocean sciences at UC Santa Cruz, said in a statement. "The domoic acid levels are extremely high right now in Monterey Bay, and the event is occurring as far north as Washington State," he said. "It appears this will be one of the most toxic and spatially largest events we've had in at least a decade." Researchers are concerned that shellfish and other marine life, including razor clams, crabs, hake, and West Coast sardines, could have elevated levels of domoic acid. The chemical has been responsible for several deaths and sickened more than 100 people, according to the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. Fish and shellfish can accumulate domoic acid without ill effect, the agency said, but in humans it crosses into the brain and interferes with nerve signal transmissions. Earlier this month, Washington authorities closed crab fishing from the border with Oregon through southern Washington because of elevated marine toxin levels, the agency said in a statement. And here in Monterey Bay, shellfish, clams, and some other things like herring and sardines are also on the prohibited list. This week, a team of scientists set out from Oregon in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration research vessel to study the bloom, the agency said. Scientists will try and determine whether the massive size of the bloom is linked to this year's warmer-than-average water conditions from Washington to Southern California. The ship will sample water from the Mexican border north to Vancouver Island, the Seattle Times reported. And this story was written by Victoria Cavalier, with editing by Peter Cooney of Thomson Reuters Environment, World Environment News. And a black bear has been spotted in Indiana for the first time in 144 years. Once again, story written by Brendan O'Brien with editing by Sandra Mahler of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. A black bear has been spotted in Indiana for the first time in more than 140 years, state wildlife officials said on Tuesday. Paw prints and a scat pile found in northwest Indiana were left behind by a young male black bear that likely walked into the state from Michigan within the last week, according to an Indiana Department of Natural Resources. It's quite unusual and exciting for a Michigan lakeshore black bear to move this far south, said Mitch Marcus, an Indiana Department of Natural Resources wildlife official. It was the first evidence of a wild bear in Indiana since 1871, the DNR said, adding there was no panic in the state about the unexpected visitor. The scat pile was found in a driveway just north of South Bend, and the paw prints were found in LaPorte County, about 70 miles northeast of Chicago, according to the department. Young black bears typically disperse in the springtime as they seek new territory to settle, the release said. Black bear, once native species in Indiana, are now listed as an exotic mammal and protected under Indiana law. Indiana does not have a breeding population of black bears, but we expect this one to turn back north eventually, Marcus said. But you never know. There might be a mama bear somewhere around there. Last week, the Washington, D.C. District Court of Appeals threw out a lawsuit from the timber industry that would have forced the Bureau of Land Management to increase logging on public lands in southwest Oregon. And this story from Klamasiscue Wild. While we are welcoming this new ruling, we also need a new vision for public lands management. With the industry lawsuit behind us, many communities are focused on new plans that the Obama administration recently released for Western Oregon public lands. One Southern Oregon community has stepped up and offered a vision for their backyard forests. Local residents in the Applegate Valley of Southwest Oregon have produced a 10-point plan, the Applegate Community Public Lands Vision. Instead of receiving timber volume from traditional practices that involve clear-cutting and logging the biggest, most fire-resistant trees, this plan calls for thinning around homes and removing small trees that drive severe fires near towns. The plan prioritizes community engagement, clean water protection, recreation enhancement, and protection for special places. Small family farms in the Applegate depend on public forests to provide clean water for agriculture, which drives their local economy. And here's the press release from Klamasiscue Wildland Center. Logging industry lawsuit demanding aggressive cutting thrown out by federal court. Lawsuit demanding higher logging levels, fewer protections for old growth, clean water and wildlife on public lands. The lawsuit sought to force the Bureau of Land Management to increase logging on public lands in southwest Oregon was thrown out in a Washington, D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The ruling vacates a 2013 decision that would have forced the Bureau of Land Management to sell timber even when those sales would have harmed salmon and had detrimental impacts on water quality and recreation. The appellate court today threw out an unprecedented, unworkable, and backward decision that could have forced the Bureau of Land Management to violate its duties to manage these lands for air, water, wildlife, and people, not just clear cuts, said Kristen Boyles, an attorney at Earth Justice. The ruling should discourage logging companies from demanding to cut 100-year-old forests because no one person and no particular private logging company is entitled to log wherever it wants. Our public lands provide clean drinking water, protect wild salmon, and preserve water quality in our rivers, lakes, and streams. These lands are home to some of the last remaining ancient forests in America, said Joseph Vail of the Oregon-based Klamasiscue Wildland Center. We should focus on a responsible plan for these forests and leave a legacy for future generations. The dinosaurs in the logging industry have claimed for years that they should have priority over protecting old growth, clean water, wildlife, and recreation on America's public lands. For 20 years, science, the law, and the public have been telling them no, said Doug Hyken, Oregon Wild Conservation and Restoration Coordinator. The logging companies had argued that a 1937 law required the Bureau of Land Management to sell large amounts of timber from the Medford and Roseburg districts in southwest Oregon, regardless of the harm to water quality, recreational use, and wildlife and fish. In 2013, a district judge in Washington, D.C., sided with the logging industry despite contrary legal decisions from other federal courts in the Oregon and the West, said Kalama Siskiyou Wildlands Center. Oregon Wild and Cascadia Wildlands also appealed as interveners in the timber lawsuit. The D.C. Circuit maintained that the logging companies and logging lobbying groups had failed to show that they were actually harmed by any Bureau of Land Management actions and dismissed the case entirely. A number of prominent politicians cited this logging industry lawsuit when they proposed legislation to weaken environmental protections and increase clear-cutting on our public forests, said Doug Hyken. The perceived timber industry threat is now gone, and it's time to put these outdated ideas behind us. Time to focus on a balanced plan that recognizes all the public benefits that flow from our public forests, clean water, carbon storage, fish and wildlife, recreation, and quality of life. The Kalama Siskiyou Wildlands Center, Oregon Wild and Cascadia Wildlands were represented by Earth Justice and the Western Environmental Law Center as appellate interveners in the case. Back to World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. This story, Shell's Alaska Arctic Spill Response Plan wins court approval, written by Jonathan Stemple and editing by Alan Crosby and Grant McCool. A divided federal appeals court on Thursday rejected an effort by a coalition of environmental groups to revoke federal approval of Royal Dutch Shell PLC's oil spill response plans relating to drilling on Alaska's Arctic remote coast. And the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, in a 2-1 vote, said the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, which is part of the Department of Interior, acted lawfully in approving the plans, which relate to Shell oil leases in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas from 2005, 2007, and 2008. It rejected arguments by environmental groups such as the National Audubon Society, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Sierra Club that the approval was arbitrary and capricious based on Shell's unsupported assumption that it could recover 90 to 95% of any oil spilled in the Arctic. Many environmental advocates opposed drilling in the Arctic on concerns that any spill might prove very difficult to clean up. Shell hopes to resume Arctic fossil fuel exploration as soon as next month, having been putting it on hold following a mishap-laden 2012 drilling season. And let's turn to some biological diversity news. In a recent study in Freshwater Science has backed up a petition that the Center for Biological Diversity filed with the Xerces Society in 2010 to protect a rare Western Glacier stonefly under the Endangered Species Act. And sadly, the flies are even rarer now than they were then. These ice-loving insects, which live nowhere else on Earth but Montana's Glacier National Park, are threatened by glacial retreat, which is happening because of climate change. They now exist, according to the study, in only one of the six streams where they lived 3 years ago. The ice masses are projected to completely disappear in Glacier National Park by 2030, leaving the stoneflies without their highly specific habitat, cold streams flowing from patches of glacial ice. As the climate warms, glaciers, the majestic remnants of the last ice age, are melting away across the world. In light of the study's findings, the center will prioritize glacier stonefly in its litigation for 2015 in order to obtain our 12-month findings. And a new federal rule has made it easier to kill Mexican gray wolves. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has issued a rule that caps the number of Mexican gray wolves in Arizona and New Mexico at 325, bans them north of Interstate 40, and eases the path for private parties and government agents to kill them. Although the rule expands the animal's room to roam and allows releases of captive bred wolves into New Mexico for the first time, which could help alleviate inbreeding, the other provisions will damage the wolves' long-term recovery. The agency announced a second rule that protects Mexican wolves as a subspecies separate from other wolves, entitling them to their own recovery plan. Both new rules stem from petitions and lawsuits filed by the Center for Biological Diversity. The Mexican gray wolf recovery program has been hamstrung from the start, and this new management rule doesn't go nearly far enough to fix the problem, said Michael Robinson, the Center for Biological Diversity's wolf coordinator. Capping the population and keeping them out of the Grand Canyon in northern New Mexico will keep the lobo on the brink of extinction. And hellbenders, North America's largest salamander, face a long list of threats to its survival, including water pollution as well as capture and collection. And now there's concrete proof of one more, a disease caused by the chytrid fungus, which affects amphibians across the country. A new study finds the chytrid fungus is widespread in western North Carolina waterways, infecting more than 25% of the hellbenders found in the region. The study was spurred by the imperiled status of the hellbender, whose populations are in sharp decline across the western United States. In response to a center petition in 2011, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service found that eastern hellbenders might warrant protection under the Endangered Species Act. But after the agency failed to make a final decision within 1 year, as the act requires, we sued, and that is the Center for Biological Diversity. In 2013, they reached a settlement requiring a protection decision before 2018. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 9 p.m. You can listen to Free Radio tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock for a rebroadcast. If you're in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to KRFP 90.3 FM Radio Free Moscow at 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights for a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update. You could also try on the web at northbysouthradio.com. That's northbysouthradio, all one word, .com. They stream intermittently and occasionally rebroadcast the Earth First Update. And you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download. You can listen online or download this or previous versions of the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.